The Rundown, Part 12, A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Street lights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
System Guard Officer Donald Tyson looked out at the stars, frozen and motionless beyond the porthole despite the roar of the engines of the small interceptor craft that carried him. They might never change, he thought. Those stars were eternal, while the lives of those trapped beneath them burned brightly and then faded away. So much had changed in his life. So much had been found. And so much lost. Once upon a time, until not long ago, Donald Tyson had a brother. Not a DNA brother. Well, he might, but Donald couldn't remember that far back, so that's not who he meant when he said brother. His first memories were of screams and pain. Actually, most of his young memories were of screams and pain. That's what happens when you're raised a slave, digging radioactive ores out of a barely pressurized asteroid mine. Donald had always been a big kid. The injections his masters gave him helped with that. The best workers got the best injections. Sometimes the injections were all it took to make sentience dig. The masters liked it best when their slaves got nice and addicted. Not Donald. They kept him strong, but didn't pacify him, or make him grovel and beg, or perform some of the favors he saw the other boys shamelessly give for another prick of the skin or hiss of the injector. He looked away when he saw those things happen. As far back as he could remember, he was too small to resist the guards and their hurting boxes, so he never tried. When he grew into his skin, he just didn't care about the others anymore. That happened, too, in the mines. People died by the ton. There was always a cartload of bloody boots, slashed tentacles, hands with nails ripped clean off that would never move again. The masters left the cart right in the middle of whatever cave they were working to encourage people not to care about anything except doing exactly what they were told. Since he was big and strong and didn't fight back, Donald lasted much longer than most in the mines. Then the giggler showed up. They didn't call him that at first. The master's new productivity manager was a Skanan, small for his species, but still bigger than most of the slave crew. Every morning he'd bring the injections, and for a while, the mostly human crew breathed a sigh of relief. He might have been weird. How often did you ever hear the giant insectoid alien Skanan's giggle? But for a while, there were no more violations, no more sick pleasure taken from hurting slaves in the dark. Even Donald felt dirty inside, turning his back against whimpers in the middle of the night. Then the giggler told them they all had to work faster, had to produce more to get their food, their injections, to stop for water and rest. When the sleep shifts were cut to 4 hours a day, the grumbling started. That's when the giggler earned his name. Three giant tumbler brothers stood up to the giggler after a fourth brother died in a mineshaft collapse. They surrounded him, enraged, tentacles thrashing and coating the walls and other slaves with black blood dripping from their cracked black tentacles. The other slaves huddled against the walls, shocked at the disobedience. Later, Donald remembered why it happened, but it would be a long time before he understood why it happened. Family. The Skanan silly giggling got even higher pitched when he tore the three tumblers apart. Donald had stood and stared, enduring the giggler's anatomy lesson. First, he ripped the spherical exoskeleton of the first tumbler brother apart, tore all the tentacles off its body. Then he made it watch as he eviscerated its brothers with the shattered bone fragments. In the coming days, there were twice as many cartloads of bodies in the middle of the mine. Everyone worked to exhaustion, got up before the giggler's prod, beat the master's quotas even, but still the bodies mounted up higher and higher than ever before. More bodies, bloodier, destroyed with loving sickness, and always those obscene giggles echoing off the walls, until one day something broke inside Donal, and he did not look away. Perhaps it was the exhaustion. Perhaps the peculiar yellow color of innards spilled out of the old man who had shared his food tray with Donal just an hour before. Donal moved silently behind the giggler. It leaned forward, its upper limbs resting on its middle limbs, and its lower legs stepping on the old man, savoring his final twitching moment. Donal slammed the long-bodied drill behind both the Skanan's knees, and it toppled backwards. The giggling stopped, replaced by surprised, papery rattling from its mandibles. Donal put a stop to that, too, when he activated the drill and bore a hole through its skull and shook its brain to paste. Then he turned and lay down by the wall, ready for the thumping of the master's armored boots and the inevitable example they would make of him for all the other workers to see. He didn't care. All that mattered was he'd never hear that giggling ever again. The silence dragged on. None of the workers moved. Terror was mounting. The absolute helplessness and despair of slaves afraid to even enjoy the momentary respite from suffering he'd given them. Donald's lips curled as he began to hate them all. The groan of metal, the crack of skein and chitin, and the tumble of bodies startled Donal back to his feet. A boy, older looking than Donal but much smaller, stood on the opposite side of the cart of dead closest to the giggler. Or rather, what was left of the giggler after the boy had used a long metal bar to tip the heavy metal ore cart. The closest end to Donal had crushed the giggler's entire head and shoulders, erasing the evidence of Donald's defiance. Donald stared, dumbfounded, at the boy, who nodded back before tossing the pole away and adopting the same frightened position as the rest of the workers, curling into a ball near the far wall. Only then did the heavy boots of the masters thunder in the corridors, coming closer. The asteroid mine claimed many more lives before their masters fell, but not Donald's, nor Sala's. There was always another taskmaster, and always danger. More danger now, that the two had found each other, became family. They had something to lose now, besides what both assumed would be short lives. They learned about each other, created signals and gestures to communicate even under the most watchful of taskmaster's eyes. Sala was smart, and he could always think up ways to shift a heavy load without breaking their bodies. He befriended some taskmasters when it made the workers' lives easier, and made fools out of the others to raise the spirits of the crew. He even convinced the others to part with their precious injections, a few golden teeth and exoskeleton rings, and used them to set up another cruel taskmaster as a thief in the eyes of the masters. He was never seen again after the shift when Donal slipped the precious treasures into the cruel taskmaster's pack. Sala was smart, but he was also a smart ass, sarcastic and cocky. Donal saved him from beatings more than once over the years, and even delivered one when he had to prevent a mob from doing the same and surely killing this man he now thought of as his brother. They lived. They eked out laughter and even a small amount of joy from their horrible existence. They survived, right up until the day the System Guard came. 27 years passed since the System Guard killed the Masters and claimed the resource-rich asteroid on the fringes of the Winterbelt as their own. Donal and Sala's lives completely changed, but their bond never did. Both were sent to Academy Rock, the System Guard's military academy for young sentients. They learned something bigger than themselves, something that would not rest until the tyrants and cruelty that festered all across the system was beaten back, just as the guard had done when they chased the dragons and their vile followers, the Tears, out of the Sky Cities, and freed millions from the kind of terror and slavery the brothers knew all too well. They grew up. They kissed girls. They played sports. They became academic rivals, vied for the affection of the same woman once or twice, but always patched those wounds and found new ways to challenge each other and serve the guard. Donal would never forget the day, not long before graduation, that he and his brother had stood arm in arm, cheering with the crowd, thousands strong, as a kilometer-high holofield of Admiral Robeson announced the final Dragon Clan's defeat after months of all-out war, the goal of which had been nothing less than the destruction of Academy Rock Asteroid and the System Guard shipyards orbiting Kesh. After the Academy, the brothers proudly accepted commissions in the System Guard. Both started as soldiers, but after several campaigns against Tier holdouts, pirates, and unfriendly states, their paths diverged. Donal showed a capacity for leadership, but an even greater capacity for putting a stop to troubles that superior firepower could not solve. After several tours as a border guard and then as a police guard showed Donal almost all of Farlost, he found his niche as a police guard liaison officer. For years, Donal had thought of himself as the brother who solved problems with his fists, where Sala had been the clever one who could talk his scrawny ass out of situations he didn't have the muscle to solve. As men, both surprised themselves. Donal learned his emotional intelligence and communication skills made him indispensable handling politically sensitive situations with System Guard allies and even some of the neutral states. Sala developed his physical skills far more than he'd ever believed possible before Academy Rock, at the behest of the officers who groomed him for service in espionage roles and later became a key strategy planner for military operations across Farlost. Through the years, the men never lost touch, never stopped thinking of themselves as brothers, as family. Sala retired early. Sala had seen and done things in the service of the guard that he couldn't quite live with. It was war, Donal would say in hushed tones, over drinks in the officers' quarters or walking empty halls, and only then. The guard had given them their lives, shown them the mysteries and wonders of the worlds. But the pursuit of order and justice, the goal of saving an entire civilization from barbarity and destruction, was not a gentle business. Nor was the guard understanding of treasonous talk. In those quiet moments, Sala would smile and recite the words about the great honor of serving the guard being worth the cost. But by the time Sala retired, the smile would never quite reach his eyes. They kept in touch. Borrowed a guard ship once a year to revisit the ports where they'd served and fought in their soldiering days. Taunted each other when their favorite teams fell each season. Sent each other the ugliest sweaters they could find on their birthdays, which, since they really didn't know, they had dreamed up for each other in the horrible dark of their childhood in the mine. Sala took a job working for the Kesh shipyards that was quickly expanding the System Guard fleet. There he served as a liaison between the CEO, a quiet Skanan father of four, and the System Guard. Donal had liked the man. He didn't act like a man who'd inherited his fortune. He treated his wife and kids well, he treated Sala well, and he'd even provided the ship for their last vacation together, a luxury yacht, which was quite a step up from the System Guard ships they'd begged, borrowed, and just about stealed for their previous jaunts. Donal laughed, remembering how he and Sala had made it their mission to empty every single bottle in that ship's bar. Thank God for autopilots, they both had said numerous times, heads hanging in toilets, or potted plants, or one time on the control system for the aforementioned autopilot. His smile flatlined, remembering the next time he saw his brother. On another hologram. But not one in a message Donal had been expecting for weeks, since shipping off a truly hideous neon blue and yellow striped sweater to his brother, care of the Kesh Shipworks, where his brother would be returning to work shortly after volunteering his services to the CEO and his family on a vacation cruise of their very own. No. This video had streamed across Farlost. This video had his brother in it. But Salah didn't get to say a word. This was the infamous Roland Bird video. Donal had watched with growing horror as Roland himself tortured the insectoid Skanen CEO's children in front of the man, tearing exoskeleton off, slicing eyeballs, eye stalks, while they cried. Watched Roland thank the CEO for helping him send a message to the system guard before he pushed him into the airlock with his family and spaced them all. And then, almost as an afterthought, and horrific backdrop to a smiling Roland Bird facing the camera as he demanded the release of political prisoners and contested territories from the iron fist of the system guard, Donal watched Bird's men march the CEO's Manta and human crew into the airlock to space them, too, for the crime of collaborating with the enemy of freedom. Donal watched Salah silently but passionately plead for his crewmates' lives through the airlock window as the still-smiling Roland Bird cycled it open. And then Donal watched his brother disappear, sucked into the black. Donal stared at the stars, so distant, so cold, so unmoving. He felt numb. He had, since he'd heard the news, seen the news. He had called in every favor he could and gotten himself assigned to the team hunting Bird down. He'd felt nothing for months. Then someone slipped him unofficial word that a Black Ops team was bringing Bird in, until a mercenary named Bayman beat them to it and sold him to Locklaw Sky City. Something about handing him over with a ribbon on it at the opening of talks with Haven SG, about reopening formal discussions, trade negotiations. Donal didn't really know and he didn't really care. He had other plans for Roland Bird. The stars outside the window spun as the guardship carrying him nosed down. Inside, Donal felt eagerness grow, and for a moment it covered the pain of his festering heart. The curve of planet Casti filled the window now, and floating high up amidst white clouds, Locklaw Sky City. Once upon a time, up until not long ago, Donal Tyson had a brother. He felt something now. It wouldn't live long. And when it passed, he'd once again be as cold and dead inside as the light of the stars. But he'd enjoy it while it lasted. His brother's killer was down there, somewhere. Donal looked down and swore an oath. I am coming for you, Roland Bird. You have been listening to The Rundown, a far-lost story. Written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On, by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com. If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.